You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It's Friday. You made it through the week. Congratulations. Welcome to the weekend and welcome into the Locked On Kings podcast. This is your hub for Sacramento Kings coverage all regular season, all off season. It does not matter, even during the month of August, which is the driest month for the NBA all year long. We have Kings and NBA coverage for you. And guess what? The NBA announced it yesterday. Schedules are dropping next week. So we'll have full coverage and full breakdowns of the Kings and the national television broadcasts for the NBA next season. All of that is coming for you next week. Also, some great interviews for you next week as well. Keep it right here to Locked On Kings. We'll get you through the rest of this long month into September, and that's when training camp and preseason really gets going. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host here. I'm from Sports 1140 KHDK. That's the flagship radio station of the Kings in Sacramento. I work there as an on-air host and a multimedia journalist and reporter, and I'm fired up today. Can you tell? Because today is strictly an interaction episode. Now, I had planned on having an interview this week, another interview here to wrap up the week like I normally do during the offseason. However, unfortunately, schedules were not able to work out, so I do have two fantastic future interviews planned. We're working out dates and times. Those are coming for you, I promise. One is with a Sacramento professional athlete who has connections to the NBA and interest in the NBA that I think you're going to enjoy and be interested in. And the other one, which I teased on last podcast, is someone involved with the Sacramento Kings organization that has my favorite story going on right now. He, unfortunately, is in China, so I was not able to connect with him and work out a time to speak with him. But when he comes back in September, I'm going to be speaking with him, and he's going to be coming here on the Locked On Kings podcast, someone you're going to want to listen to. I don't want to say more than that because I'm really excited just to have him share his story and to share with you more details about that interview closer to when it happens, when we get to September. But I had to change things up really quickly because I wasn't able to get either of the interviews to work out here for the end of the week. So I put out on Twitter that this was going to be a question and answer mailbag type episode. And I know a lot of you aren't on social media, and many of you probably would have wanted to send questions to me but weren't able to see that announcement because maybe you don't follow me on Twitter. Maybe you just aren't on Twitter in general. So I apologize for that, but I did put out a tweet asking you to send me questions to my email that I would read and try and answer as many as I could here on the Locked On Kings podcast today. Got like 30 or 40 questions from you guys. Thank you so much. I had to cut it down to 12. I tried to answer if your answers or your questions weren't answered actually on the podcast itself. I still am going to try to respond to every single one of those emails. Maybe I'll save them for another later day. And if you have questions, like maybe you didn't know that the Q&A was going on, but you have a question you want to send in, please do. I'll either respond to you off the air over email, or I might even bring it to the Locked On Kings podcast from time to time as well. But this is a Q&A mail bag type episode. Got so many questions from you, limited it down to 12, and I'm going to answer all of these as well as I can. So I'm looking forward to doing this. Jason Ross used to do this a lot with the Locked On Kings podcast when he was the host a number of years ago. I do fans only episodes where I actually bring fans on and interview them. But it's good to be able to have a full podcast in a format for me to answer your questions. And stick around even if you didn't ask a question yourself, because I think a lot of your fellow fans are going to be asking and posting questions that maybe you're curious about heading into next season. So without any further ado, let's dive into this, and we'll start with Ryan. Ryan asks, with a Buddy Hield extension in the works, is there any word on Bogdan Bogdanović and the Kings' intentions with him? Great question, Ryan. Thank you so much for sending that in. Bogdan Bogdanović is in an interesting situation right now. It's very safe to say, and very fair to say, that he is coming off of a rather disappointing year. Now, I think he was completely thrown off his game by the fact that he started the season injured. He was still recovering from surgery that he had last offseason. We know that is not the case right now. I believe he is going to be competing in the FIBA World Cup in China. So, of course, we're hoping that he does not get injured while he is partaking in that for Serbia. However, we have no reason to believe he's not going to be healthy heading into this year, and I think that's going to have a significant effect on him. The Kings, like you mentioned, Ryan, and like I've mentioned before on the Locked On Kings podcast, we know for a fact, the Kings are already in conversations with Buddy Hield about a contract extension. I don't expect it to go to the end of this season. I think an extension is probably going to be done, if not before the season starts, early on in the year. I don't have any direct sources telling me that's the case, but based off of the rumors, the conversations that I've had with fellow Sacramento media, and based off of my knowledge of the intentions of the Kings, I know that Buddy Hield is a top priority for them, and they're not going to wait long to be able to lock him up and bring him back. Now, I'm assuming that the Kings are going to want to take their time with Bogdan Bogdanović for two specific reasons. One, they want to see if he can bounce back and really what his ceiling is as an NBA player. His rookie year, how great he was, one of the best players for the Kings a couple of years ago. Was that the best that Bogdan Bogdanović can be? It's still pretty good, but how much money is that worth? The Kings are still trying to ultimately figure that out. And they also have contractual control over Bogey. Now, technically, this is his second NBA contract. He did not play at all and come to the United States and come to the NBA during his rookie contract. Remember, when he was traded to the Kings from the Phoenix Suns, the Kings got the rights to him. And then when he came over to Sacramento and started playing in the NBA, they restructured his deal so that it would be a better than a NBA rookie contract. But they still will have restricted rights to him if they choose to exercise his qualifying offer heading into next season, which I think is most likely what is going to be taking place. Bogdan Bogdanović, the qualifying offer is worth around $10 million, and Bogey heading into this summer and next offseason will be about 27 years old. So maybe they'll be patient with it, see the kind of year that he has, offer him a qualifying offer, and see what kind of offers he gets on the open market and try to match one of those. Or if they feel like they can get him on a good deal and not have to really test the market and fight market value for him and lock him up for another 2-3 years, they might do that as well. I know they view Bogdan Bogdanović as part of their long-term future, part of the core, the rotation that will hopefully get this Kings team to a championship one day. They value him a lot. So they're certainly not just going to disregard him and move on from him and throw all their money at Buddy and Fox and Bagley and not consider throwing some dollars Bogey's way as well. But excellent question, Ryan. Thank you for kicking it off with that. Moving on to Tom. Tom asks a great question about Yogi Ferrell. He asks, where does Yogi Ferrell fit into the rotation with Fox, Hield, Bogey, and Corey Joseph? That's actually a question that I've been mulling over in my brain as well. And Luke Walton, with not just the guard positions, but even in the front court, he has some figuring out to do and some decisions to make. And what that means is there's going to be, I believe, really good competition in the training camp and preseason time. And I mean, there are spots that are open for grabs. And Corey Joseph, when the Kings brought him in, they brought him in more as a backup point guard, which the Kings have lacked. Yogi Ferrell, even though he's got the size to play the point guard position, they played him more last year. The Kings played him more as an off-ball two, which I think fits his play style better. Bogey played a lot as a primary ball handler, but fits more into the shooting guard small forward position based off of his size and his playing style. So I expect Corey Joseph to be the primary backup point guard for the Kings. However, Yogi Ferrell, I don't think, is going to be pushed out completely. Out of the four names that you listed, Fox, Hield, Bogey, and Corey, I would put Yogi behind all four of them. However, there are going to be spots, I'm sure, where Yogi is going to work himself off of the bench. If they need some scoring, if they need a spark, Yogi has speed. He can push the tempo, is a good three-point shooter. So I would not be surprised if we see some Yogi-Fox lineups or maybe some Corey Joseph-Yogi-Ferrell lineups. It all depends on injuries as well. Maybe the Kings go small with a bench unit, have Corey Joseph at the one, Yogi at the two, Bogey at the three. You don't really know, but the Kings have a lot of options when it comes to their rotation at the guard positions. Also with the center position as well, with Rashawn Holmes that is here now, and Dwayne Dedman, Nemanja Bjelica is a four, Marvin Bagley also at the four. I mean, there's a lot of bigs on this roster, Harry Giles as well. So Luke Walton has some figuring out to do. But it's a good problem to have as a head coach, to have multiple capable players that could, on any given night, work their way into the rotation. Tom, thank you so much for the question. This one is from John. John asks, or says, I look at the Kings roster and I see that defensive rebounding could be a problem next season. How do you think the Kings will address that? defensive rebounding has been a problem for this Kings team for quite a while, and we know that defensive rebounding cost the Kings a handful of games last year. The most notable of those was the first game against the Warriors in Golden State, right? The Kings needed one defensive rebound to win that game. They gave up an offensive rebound. It resulted in a Kevin Durant bucket that ended up leading to the Warriors really stealing the victory from the Kings inside of Oracle Arena. And defensive rebounding, I believe, is still going to be not a severe issue with this team, but John, I think you're absolutely right in your concerns that the defensive rebounding is still going to probably be an issue for this team. Now, they did bring in Dwayne Dedmon, who has the size to be a good rebounder, but they might be playing him a lot on the perimeter, depending upon how many minutes he is playing alongside Marvin Bagley, who we expect to start at the four. And bringing up Marvin Bagley is extremely important, in my opinion, to this entire situation, because I think they're expecting Marvin Bagley to really shoulder a lot of that rebounding load, at least as the starting power forward. However, something that Dave Yeager's coaching staff implemented that I believe is going to be carried on into this season, and something that the players I know really bought into last year, is that team rebounding is a must for this squad, and that means De'Aaron Fox can be active. Buddy Hield, I think, grew exponentially as a rebounder and as a cutter, trying to get second chance opportunities for the Kings last season. I expect him to continue with that. There's no reason why Harrison Barnes can't be an active rebounder as a starter. And then you have hustle guys coming off the bench like Rashawn Holmes. I expect Nemanja Bjelica to be more active as a rebounder, or he's probably going to lose his rotational spot. Harry Giles, we know the workload and work rate that he has. Even Trevor Ariza can rebound to some extent. So the Kings are going to be more of a team defensive rebounding group, but I still think it's fair, John, absolutely fair, to have concerns that rebounding will be a struggle for them. Moving on to Sean. Sean says, or asks, how close is Harry Giles to a starting role with the Kings? Now, I know a lot of people, and maybe you are, extremely high on Harry Giles. The hype is real with Harry, and Harry is such a great guy. He's a hard worker. He has a fantastic story. He's really a extremely low-risk, high-reward draft pick that's already paying dividends. But the Kings view him as that future starting center, hence the reason why they brought Dwayne Dedmon in on a 3-year deal, but the third year is partially guaranteed. By that third year, they are hoping and expecting, really, that Harry Giles is going to be the starting center for this team. I am high on Harry Giles, and I believe in Harry Giles, and I'm very excited to watch, hopefully, Harry Giles take that next step alongside Marvin Bagley. However, I'm a little more hesitant to hand him the keys or pass the torch onto him than other fans are, and I understand it's because he's a fan favorite and he's exciting, and he had great moments last year. Before he got hurt towards the end of the season, remember, he had about a 4-5 game stretch where he was super active on the boards. He was really active in the high post. His passing ability really started to shine through, and he's a better three-point shooter, I think, than we give him credit for. I remember there was one game in particular last year, it was towards the middle of the year, when Giles came into the game and scored a couple of back-to-back buckets on the inside. And then the Kings got a transition three-point opportunity, kicked it out to Giles. Giles took a straight-on three-pointer, and everybody stood up because it looked like it was going in, and it took a couple rattles around the rim and popped out. And everybody was, there's a groan in the Golden 1 Center, right? Because you almost expected it to go in, and if it would have, like, everybody would have lost their minds, myself and the entire media section included. Harry Giles is capable of knocking down that three-point shot, and I know for a fact that is something, along with bulking up, that he is working on this summer. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Harry Giles add more of a three-point shot to his game heading into next season. Of course, that all depends on how the Kings want to use him and where they want to put him on the floor. But to answer your question, Sean, in a very roundabout way, how close is Harry Giles to a starting role with the Kings? I don't think he becomes a starter at all this year, except for maybe specific spots if Dwayne Dedmon's hurt or Holmes just doesn't work out as well as Kings fans are hoping. I would not be surprised at all if Harry Giles does not start a single game for the Kings this year, but really is competitive as a sixth man off of the bench. And I want to see him get a lot of run alongside Marvin Bagley to see if the two can coexist as a future starting four and five going forward. I think about a year out. I think a year out is safe to say. More of your questions continuing here. Going to take a quick break. We'll come back with questions from Brandon, Kim, Ron, and Peter. Your questions are coming up here on the Locked On Kings podcast. Having a lot of fun with this Q&A format. If you want to send in questions, even if they don't make it in time for a future Locked On Kings podcast, you can send them to me anytime on Twitter at MattGeorgeKHDK, or if you're not on social media, you can reach me via email at any time, mgeorge@saclocalmedia.com. That's S-A-C, localmedia.com. Send me your questions, please, at any time. I'll either respond to you off the air and we can get into a conversation over email or over social media, or if questions are good, and I might do more of these Q&As in the future. I'm having a lot of fun with this, and the response that I got from you guys was so fantastic that I'm definitely considering doing more of them in the future. But let's carry on here with a question from Brandon. He says, I don't see why people are excited about Trevor Ariza. I don't see him playing that much for the Kings. What is his role with this team? Trevor Ariza is well past his prime, and I think that's more than fair to say. Trevor Ariza is one of those guys that's going to be brought in to be more or less a veteran presence for this Kings squad. However, I have no reason to believe that he can't be as effective in his limited time on the floor as Iman Shumpert was early on last season for the Kings. Now, I think Iman Shumpert got a little too much playing time, and I don't believe Trevor Ariza is going to be getting more than 12 to 15 minutes a night, and if he is, maybe he's playing a little bit too much. But here's what Trevor Ariza does. He plays perimeter defense, he holds you accountable, he's a good locker room presence, and he can space the floor and hit the three from time to time. He's not a fantastic three-point shooter by any means, low 30 percentile there, but he is active, he plays hard, he hustles, and I think he is a good culture setter and someone that brings playoff pedigree, had a lot of success as a defender with the Houston Rockets, was a big reason why the Rockets almost defeated the Golden State Warriors in the playoffs a couple of years ago. So to answer your question, Brandon, I don't think Trevor Ariza is going to get the minutes and the role and the opportunity. Sorry, my phone went off there. Going to get the opportunity really to make the money that he's getting paid worth it. He is getting paid a lot of money for the role that he's coming here for, but I'm not judging him based off of his paycheck. I'm judging him based off of the veteran presence and the positive impact that he can have in limited minutes on the floor, but especially in the locker room with this Kings team. I think you should be a little more excited and happy that he's here, but you're right to not expect him to have that significant of a role and of an impact on the Kings on the floor as a basketball team. That being said, if you can get nights where he gives you 10 points, 5 rebounds, and plays decent perimeter defense, I'm thrilled with that. I don't know about you, but I'm certainly thrilled with that. Kim, thank you so much for sending a question. You ask, do you think Marvin Bagley is a power forward or a center? I know a lot of people, especially on social media, think that Marvin Bagley is a center. He certainly has the athleticism and the length to play the center position. However, I know that the Kings view him first and foremost as a power forward, and they're looking at him long-term as a power forward. And to start next season, that's where he's best fit alongside Dwayne Dedmon. So to me, power forward position is a no-brainer for Marvin Bagley going forward. However, he is capable of playing center. He's actually been playing center a lot with Team USA in training camp over the last couple of days this week, and that's made a lot of people happy. He's capable of playing the position, which makes him versatile. If the Kings want to go small, he's certainly not a bad option to put at the five. It's weird. They usually play Harry Giles at the center position when they play him and Marvin Bagley together. However, I would almost expect Marvin Bagley to do a lot of the center's work with the two of them on the floor. Of course, Marvin Bagley has established his outside shot more than Harry Giles, which is why he'll probably slot more comfortably into the power forward position. But most likely, the majority of his minutes, like last year, are going to be at power forward. But don't be surprised at all if the Kings use him as a center in some capacity from time to time. Ron asks, if you could pick any active NBA player to put on the Kings, who would you add to the team? I'd love to see Kawhi Leonard in Kings purple, and I think he would immediately make a championship team. I would love to see Kawhi Leonard on the Kings too. Sadly, that's not going to happen. He is in the Kings division. He's with the Los Angeles Clippers. Kawhi Leonard would certainly help this Kings team, especially from a defensive standpoint, and he would plug right into that small forward position and would hold it down. This is all fantasy. This is all hypothetical. There's no chance Kawhi would probably ever be a King, and there's no chance that my answer to this question would really ever be a King. But I love Giannis Antetokounmpo. I love him with a passion. I love what he does for the game. I love how he can play the three through the five. He's working on that outside shot as well. And to see Giannis Antetokounmpo on this Kings team running with De'Aaron Fox, working with Buddy Hield, who would fit perfectly alongside him as someone who just can space the floor and allow Giannis to go to work attacking the rim. Same thing with Marvin Bagley. To answer your question, Giannis Antetokounmpo on the Kings with this squad would be awesome, and I would love to see that take place. Never going to happen, but that's my dream scenario there. Peter asks, who is the most valuable player on the Kings roster that they could or would trade at the deadline? I think Bogdan Bogdanovic is certainly close to, if not at the top of that list. Nemanja Bjelica is the guy that I think most likely the Kings will try and shop around the deadline, although I don't know how valuable that he is going to be. There's no way, in my opinion, that the Kings are going to be willing to move on from the core. De'Aaron Fox, not available. Marvin Bagley, not available. Buddy Hield, probably not available, especially if they restructure his deal. Harry Giles, I don't think he's untouchable, but I think it's very unlikely that they would move on from him as well. But I think they would listen to offers for Bogey. They certainly will listen to offers for Nemanja Bjelica. Nobody's going to want Trevor Ariza's contract. Maybe someone will want Dwayne Dedmon's contract if Dedmon's playing super well. But if Dedmon's playing well, that means the Kings are probably playing well and are successful, and there's no reason to move on from him. I don't think the Kings are going to be that active at the trade deadline this year, unless they're in a very, very tight playoff race. And at that point, I would expect them to become buyers and not sellers, meaning they'd probably be more willing to move on from a fringe piece and draft picks in order to bring in a player to help get them over the cusp rather than trading away a Bogey or selling a player like that to bring in more draft assets. But that's my opinion on that entire thing. Final four questions of the podcast today from Andrew, Paul, Josh, and Tony, coming up next on the Locked On Kings podcast. Again, send your questions at any time to me on social media. You can reach me on Twitter at MattGeorgeKHDK. Also, email me at any time, mgeorge@saclocalmedia.com. A great way to get in touch with me. Let's have some Kings conversations. If you have any questions or even want to respond, answer some of these questions yourself, please do that. Send that to me. Make your voice heard on this Locked On Podcast Network and on the Locked On Kings podcast in general. Be involved in the Locked On Kings community as well. It's more than just my voice. It's all of you as well. If you have opinions that you want to share, and if you want to share with them directly, Twitter, email, it's all open for you, and I'll do my best to respond and get into a conversation with you there. Let's continue with Andrew. Andrew said, or asks, you said in an older podcast that Dave Joerger was fired because he was stubborn. Can you explain that a little more? Yes, I can. The stubbornness, you made it sound there in the question. I know it wasn't your intention, but you make it sound as if that was a criticism of Dave Joerger. And to some extent it is. Dave Joerger is certainly stubborn as a head coach. I've also said that Vlade Divac is stubborn as a general manager. It's all very true. What I mean by that is that Dave Joerger is an old-fashioned coach in the sense that he believes the general manager builds the team and is responsible for bringing in players and putting together a solid roster. But then once the season begins, once the games are going, the practices are going, it falls on Dave Joerger and his coaching staff to put the lineups together, to handle rotations, to play players the way that they want to be played. And Dave Joerger believes that that should be up to him and on him, and he is going to make the decisions for that. And we know at times, based off of Jaeger's rotations and his patience in bringing De'Aaron Fox into the starting picture. Same thing with Marvin Bagley last year. I mean, all rookies around Marvin Bagley's selection range. So most lottery rookies were starting last year, and Marvin Bagley started a handful of games, but really was a bench asset and a bench unit. And that development worked for De'Aaron Fox. We're hoping it works for Marvin Bagley as well. But that is directly in the Dave Joerger school of thinking and rookie development pattern. And I know for a fact there's certain members of the front office, maybe Vlade included at times, that wasn't necessarily happy with that. When Luke Walton was hired, Vlade and Walton expressed how they were on the same page completely with how the team should be run, how the team should play, minutes, distribution, rotations, things like that. And that emphasis that they put on that made me believe that that was the major reason they elected to turn away or move on from Dave Joerger. It wasn't because he didn't do a good job, because he did. It wasn't because of his issues with Brandon Williams, although that had an effect on things. And don't twist my words in suggesting that Dave Joerger and Vlade Divac did not get along, because they did. They really did. They just didn't see eye to eye on certain areas, and it's Vlade's prerogative. If he wishes to bring in someone that is going to be completely on the same page as him, that's your right to do. And that's the move that he ended up making. Andrew, thank you so much for that question. Paul asks, of all the names that the Kings were interested in this summer, who did you want the most and who would have been the best fit? Well, those are two very separate questions. Who did I want the most? Tobias Harris. I love Tobias Harris. I think he's going to be fantastic, and I think it was very well done by the Philadelphia 76ers to keep him around. He was great with the Clippers last year, and I think he would have been a great small forward slash power forward at times with the Kings, although they did hold on to Harrison Barnes, and of course they have Marvin Bagley playing the four, so it's not the worst thing in the world. But I love Tobias Harris. I would have loved to see him on the Kings. Him being involved, or the Kings being involved in his rumors, I think was more smokescreen than anything else. I don't think they had much of a chance to get him and much interest to land him, but they would have been foolish not to at least be quote-unquote interested. Who would have been the most or the best fit? I think, honestly, they got one of the best fits, and that's Dwayne Dedmon. Now, I'm not trying to overhype Dedmon. He's not nearly as good as Al Horford would have been. He's not nearly as good as Tobias Harris, but Dwayne Dedmon fills the holes. He protects the rim, he spaces the floor, and he rebounds. He checks all three boxes that the Kings need at that center position that, quite frankly, they didn't have consistently with Willie Cauley-Stein. So I think at the center position specifically, out of all the names that they were interested in, they got the best fit in Dwayne Dedmon. Josh says, are you taking the over or the under on the Kings 37.5 win total? Josh, why you even ask that? You know the answer to that. Any Locked On Kings listeners know the answer to that. I'm pounding that over. I would put big money on that over easily if I had big money to spend on that. But 37.5 wins. I know the West has gotten better, but all these projections that I'm seeing suggesting that the Kings are going to be a worse team, or maybe they don't make the playoffs. I think that's completely fair, but this team is going to improve on 39 wins, in my opinion. I also believe this team is going to be a playoff team, but I think this team is going to break 500 this year. This is going to be the year. They have too much talent. They did well in the offseason to fill their holes. I think De'Aaron Fox takes another big step. Marvin Bagley takes another big step. Hopefully Harry Giles takes another big step. And I don't think Buddy Hield needs to improve at all on what he did last year, but if he can consistently be around 41, 42% from three-point range, the Kings are going to be a force to be reckoned with. And they were a handful, like Kyle Madsen talked about on the Locked On Kings podcast earlier this week. If their late game execution was better last year, they would have been a 45-46 win team. They had a handful of games that they fumbled away late at the end. If they have improved upon that, they will be a 45-plus win team, in my opinion. So I'm absolutely hitting that over. Final question from Tony. When the Kings make the playoffs this season, I like that you would win, Tony. When the Kings make the playoffs this season, which team do you want their first playoff series in over a decade to be against? What a great question. Because, I mean, the Lakers come to mind, right? Because you want to reignite that Kings-Lakers rivalry, but then you're running into LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So you really have to battle the which team do I think the Kings could potentially beat in a series versus what would be the fun storyline. I don't think the Kings could beat the Lakers in a series. And I'm just being honest there. However, we haven't even seen either team play yet. But going into it, as of right now, I wouldn't want the Lakers, even though it would reignite that rivalry. I really, really would love to see, just for Northern California, a Kings and Warriors playoff series. Even if the Kings can't beat the Warriors, who knows what the Warriors are going to be. But the Kings and Warriors would be my ideal playoff series heading into next year, just to call it the I-80 Classic or the I-80 Series or whatever. I know the Warriors are going to be opening up Chase Center. Kings fans will travel. Warriors fans will travel down here. It'll just be really fun. It's something we've never experienced before. So my fingers are crossed that that will take place. Tony, thank you so much for the question. All those questions are open to you as well. Like I mentioned, answer them on social media at MattGeorgeKHDK. Email me your answers, mgeorge@sacklocalmedia.com. Send me your questions as well, and I will better publicize next time when we are doing one of these mailbag question and answer type episodes. I had a lot of fun doing it. I hope you enjoyed it as well. We will be back next week for more fantastic coverage. NBA schedules are being released. We're going to dive headfirst into full breakdowns of that, plus more great interviews in the works for you. You're going to want to keep it plugged in for the remainder of August, September, October, hell, all year long. Never miss an episode of the Locked On Kings podcast and be a part of the show as well. Love you guys. Have yourself a fantastic and safe weekend. I'll talk to you next week. This has been the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.